Good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. The South Cars server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8 Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off this system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they have checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for this digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net controls this evening are actually twofold. We have KC2RMO, Gary up there in stormy Syracuse, and we have the Chief, W4RFJ, in Ridley Park. And I'm merely going to open it up this evening. My name is Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. And I'm in Port St. Lucie, where it's currently a temperature of 86 degrees. I believe it's 81, but it was a high of 86 today. And I think it's going to be a low of about 70. But it could be stormy here as well. But we'll be hopeful that it won't be. But prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled. If so, please come aboard. Hearing no emergency traffic, and that's always a great thing. How about that question I always ask? Are there any birthday stations last week, tonight, this upcoming week that would like to be the first to come aboard this evening? So how about any birthday stations?
NS2B, April 19th.
We love it, just love it.
Well, good evening, gentlemen, and Mr. Robert, thanks for being here. I'm not sure of your birthday, but April 19th. So thanks so much, Bob, for being here. Actually, that's about a month away is my birthday, so I'm glad we had some birthday stations this evening. So let me call on you first, if it's okay, Bob, NS2B, and let's see if you have any plans for your birthday, and thanks for being here tonight.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to really do anything. It'll, you know, I usually manage to eat some birthday cake and watch some races or go ride the motorcycle or those kind of things. And the weather is cooperating in that way, so it'll be a fine weekend. And that's about it for me. Looking forward to the net. Back to it, NS2B.
Well, thank you once again, Bob, for being here, and I'm sure it'll be a fantastic session tonight. I'm sure you'll have a fantastic birthday as well, and I want to just wish you a very, very happy birthday. Mr. Robert, MM3LVQ, I understand you've been under the weather a little bit. So, without looking, when is your birthday, Mr. Scotland, come aboard?
Wednesday, calf, 22nd. So, I'm going to get two birthday presents, one tonight and one on Saturday, so it'll make a difference. So, I'm under the weather, calf, not getting too great. I just got out of the hospital Tuesday morning, so I'm getting there. As I said to the chief earlier on, and I think it was, can't mind. Let me see. Doug, I talked to Doug earlier on, and I just said, it's all right, I'm still alive and kicking. So, as long as that happens, I'm all right. This is Mike 3, Lima Victor, Quebec. The weather over here, calf, is it's not bad. It's 48 Fahrenheit, 30, what kind of read that? But humidity is 82, the wind is 20 to 30 miles an hour from the west, and a 0% chance of rain. So I'm going to listen for a wee while, and then I'm going to go to my four-poster, take my medicine, and then bed. This is Mike 3, Lima Victor, Quebec, West Central Scotland. Bye to you, Kath.
Well, thanks for being here, Robert, tonight, even though you're under the weather, and hopefully you'll listen, but we always have the recording, so if you need to take the medicine and go to that four-poster, and that's probably where you should be. But I think it was Doug who sent both Gordon and myself an email that he had talked to you and that you've been drinking chicken noodle soup. So after I open the session and turn it over to our net controls, I'm going to actually go make us some dinner. So you have a great evening and get yourself better, and hopefully we'll talk this weekend because I believe I'm one of the net controls this Saturday. So with that, this is the monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. I want to advise everyone that we always record these sessions, so if you've been part of this session this evening, you'll definitely be part of that podcast. So with that, I'm going to throw it first to you, Gary, so you can begin, and you and Roger can go back and forth, and hopefully you'll get a lot of questions and give out a lot of information. So this is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, looking for KC2 RMO.
And you found them. Thank you, Kath. Robert, you know, you need that old home cure, you know, the vitamin C and whiskey will straighten you right out. Goodness gracious. Get better. I don't like to hear you sick. But yeah, here we are on the TIN, and we've got a good one for you tonight. This is really, you know, we kind of started something a couple of weeks ago when we got on this Linux topic, and it's a big topic, and, you know, you have to do more than one net to get that addressed. So this is going to be a fun night tonight. For those of you who don't know the voice, my name is Gary. I'm KC2RMO, and I am located in Syracuse's beautiful outer Comstock section. We've got a temperature of 68 degrees, and the skies are lowering right now. It was sunny about an hour ago, and we've got wind, and we've got threatening skies, and I think we're in for it tonight, so let me just buy a nickel. But I'm not alone in this endeavor. No, along with me tonight, we have Roger, W4RFJ. Now, Roger's an electronics specialist and an IT professional, and that actually means that he knows what he's talking about. Now, there's a lot of experience to share with us on tonight's topic, and of course, the topic tonight is installing Linux on your computer. So, Roger, say hello to everyone. And tell us a little bit more about what you do and what we're going to talk about tonight.
Oops. And KC2RMO, this is Whiskey 4, Romeo, Fox, Juliet. I don't think I know everything, but I strive to. Let's put it that way. And, yes, I'm really excited about tonight's topic. Linux has been a part of my hobby for many, many years. And I enjoy it profusely. So hopefully we'll get questions answered and get people excited about using Linux. It certainly is the way to go, Gary. And thank you for that fine introduction. Back to you, sir. This is W4RFJ.
Hey, thank you, Roger. And just for those who may not know what Linux is, you know, we got talking about this on one of the nets a couple of weeks ago, and I have been fooling around with it for a long time, actually, on and off. I know I've probably in the early 2000s, I think I got serious with it. Roger's been doing this for forever. He's very, very, very familiar with it. But what Linux is an alternative operating system. You know, you've got Windows and you've got OS X. But there are other operating systems out there, and Linux is one of them. And as we get a little bit further into the net, we'll be going into the history and all of that. But the beauty of Linux is, first of all, it'll never set you to the poorhouse. It's absolutely free. That's for one thing. Yeah, a free operating system, and it doesn't go out of style either, okay? But we'll get into that too. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. You can install it on your home computer, It's free, it's modern, it's very capable, and it would be a great alternative for just about anybody. But let's have Roger talk a little bit more about that right now. Roger, why in the world would anybody want to install Linux on their machine at home?
I'm sorry for the delay there. I'm trying to bring up my my notes here so I don't forget anything, but didn't quite give myself a chance to do that. That's okay. Why would anybody want to go to Linux? Well, you said it, Gary. The first and best issue is it's free or cheaper. That follows my number one motto, free or cheaper. Second of all, you can do just about everything in Linux that you can do in any of those other operating systems. Just to give you an example, and I'm going right off the top of my head because I can't see my notes, I use Linux to enhance my multimedia center. I can watch movies, internet videos. I've got this little Raspberry Pi running Linux that allows me to access all kinds of multimedia for my big screen TV in high resolution. Let me grab a nickel here. But most of all, I guess the biggest reason I like Linux is because I can utilize it within the amateur radio hobby. And I'm talking about Packet. I'm talking about FL Digi, which is a bunch of different types of digital communications. There's ATV. And I guess I'm really just touching a few of them. I do have a link in there that talks about the 20 reasons you should switch to Linux. This gentleman wrote this article. He's got a web page there that I think fits real well into a lot of the reasons. There's 20 reasons he put that kind of expand above and beyond the amateur radio aspect. Gary, back over to you. I hope I didn't go over my time there.
No, Roger, you're doing great. This is the TIN. I'm KC2RMO. That was W4RFJ, and we're talking about Linux tonight and what you can do with it and kind of trying to take some of the mystery out of it. I think a lot of people, you know, if you're familiar with the term, I think folks kind of shy away from it. It's like this is some voodoo operating system or this is some ultra geek operating system. And it's not. As a matter of fact, you know, I'm sitting here, you know, this is like the International House of Computing here. I've got a Mac Mini sitting up on top of my HP, and just to the left is a Linux laptop. So we're covered with everything over here. But, you know, the thing is, it works. That Linux laptop, it's a 7-year-old Dell Inspiron, and it works as good as anything out there today. Why? Because the operating system is so resilient, it's so versatile, and it's absolutely free. And you know, Roger was making a great point too when he was talking about Linux and amateur radio. Let me buy a nickel. There is a wonderful program, and it's available in different versions for different operating systems, but it's pretty cool to use it natively, and that is that program called FL Digi. There are a number of FL programs that stands for Fast Light, the way I understand it. But the FL Digi is a program that I use for a lot of my digital work. It covers a variety of modes, and it works like a charm. And I have used every freeware program that I could get my hands on to do digital, and nothing beats it. There you just cannot beat it. It works every time. It just knows your equipment. And in the variety, I mean, my goodness, there must be, I don't know, 30 or 40 different modes on that thing. I don't know. It's amazing. But that's my standard. That's the one that I go with. So right in and of itself is worth it. But they have a rig control program that works with that. And there are a number of auxiliary programs that go right along with it. But the best part, too, is if for whatever reason you feel that you want to use the Windows version of something, you can do that in Linux too, because there's a layer that's called Wine that lets you actually run those programs natively in Linux. I'm buying another nickel. Ever since I got burned on that last time I timed out, I'm being very careful. But we're on the TIN tonight, and just some of the things I know Roger was going to talk about too that he uses for Linux for. You know, Echolink, All Star, Skype. These are all programs that you can run under Linux. Myth TV, and I don't know what that is, but he did mention FL Digi and Slow Scan TV, Packet Radio, and satellite tracking too. So it's pretty versatile stuff. And of course, the price is right. It's called free, and that's all right. So we're talking about Linux tonight, and we'd like to hear your comments. You ever try it? Have you been interested in trying it? You know, or you want to know a little bit more about it, or do you just want to say hello? Even let's take some check-ins right now as we continue here on the TIN. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
6 Victor.
2 Bravo.
HK.
Well, we've got ourselves off to a good start, so let's pick it up with 6 Victor. Good evening to you, sir.
Well, good evening, Mr. Gary, and hello, Chief. Thanks to both of you for running this grand show here tonight. Gordon, KY6V. I've got a number of questions, most of which I'm going to hold off till a little later in the program because you're probably going to cover them within your presentation. But I'll start off with the first two that I had on the top here. What is your feeling of either a single platform or a dual platform computer, like having Windows on one side and Linux on the other? Pros and cons, please. The second question, have you run into any particular situations? I would hope that they're few and far between. But nevertheless, where a Windows-based program would not run on Linux. Wine couldn't wind up fast enough or anything of that nature. Back to you, Gary, KY6V.
Well, gracias, sir. Those are some good questions. I'll start with I'll give you my answers first, and then, Roger, I'm going to throw it over to you for your comments, if you don't mind. The first one, my thoughts on a dual-platform machine. I ran a dual-boot Windows Linux machine for years, never had any problems at all with that. I was running an old Dell Optiplex that I had XP on one side and Linux on the other. It was Mandrake Linux that I had running on it, and it worked like a charm. As a matter of fact, that got me through my first time in going back to school. I was broke. I mean, I was like dead broke, you know. And I had this Optiplex. That was my computer. I had lost everything I owned in a fire a couple of years prior to that. And one of the things that I lost was my Mac Performa. So I got a hold of the secondhand Dell, and it worked very well, actually. And I didn't have a lot of money, so I couldn't afford, you know, like Office, you know. So here's the beauty of Linux, okay, that they have compatible Office suites that work just like Office, or certainly close enough to it to get you through. So I did my initial time going back to school completely Linux powered, completely open source, and it worked just fine. You know, it was okay. And so that's what really got me into it was the ability to be that compatible, that you could go out and just hold your own with anything else that anybody's doing. And that's pretty good. Let me just buy a nickel. So the dual boot idea is, to me, is very natural. It's really, you know, it works fine. I've never had any trouble with it. It's simply a matter of choosing which partition you're going to go into when you boot the machine up. As far as Wine not being able to run a Windows program, I think back in the old days, I did have some trouble with it. I kind of got away from that for a while. Just recently, I started using it again, and it worked very well. So what as a matter of fact, I'll tell you, I'm using it for my JT65 software, and it works flawlessly. That is perfectly. Also, I'm running the Windows version of Echolink on Linux through Wine. So there's two programs that are working just fine, under Wine, doing very, very well with that. So I think it kind of depends on the software itself. You're bound to find one or two titles that simply aren't going to work, but my experience of recent years is that it works pretty darn well. So let's get some comments from Roger on that. Let's hear from W4RFJ. Roger, what do you think about that?
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to think if there's anything I can add. Yeah, actually, I think there is. There's a couple of things. Let me take care of question number one. I'm trying to remember what question number one was. Could you refresh my memory there, Skipper? Sorry.
No problem. I have that same sort of lapse, I guess. The question was about a dual boot machine. What do you think about a dual boot machine?
All right, let's take that one first. Of course, if you're trying Linux out, I would suggest that you try before you buy, even though it doesn't cost you anything, before you make any commitment. Okay, and one of the best ways to do that is with the Live CD. Now, Live CD has got a good side and a bad side. The good side is it loads right into RAM and doesn't change anything on the hard drive. You can do just about anything that you can do with a normal install with a Live CD. However, the bad thing is you cannot commit changes easily. And the reason for that is when you reboot it, it leaves RAM, and then you reinstall the same CD back into RAM, so any configuration changes or screen changes that you make don't get committed. Let me grab a nickel. Now, when it comes down to installing it to a hard drive, as Gordon mentioned, you know, you got the single version standalone Linux, or you got the dual boot. The standalone uses a dedicated system and will not mess up your hard drive if you make a mistake, because you're going to use the whole hard drive. It's the simplest to install, and you don't have any partitioning worries. And for some of us that aren't familiar with disks and partitions, and it can get a little messy. Dual booting it requires a little bit more complicated process. It requires some planning, because you're utilizing the same disk space that you're using for your primary Windows system. Sorry about that. So you have to decide how much you're willing to split up to use for Linux. Now, there's another solution. Let me make sure everybody's on board with me so far. Gary, have I said anything confusing yet?
No, my feeble mind understood every bit of it. But I think the one thing that we do want to mention for folks who aren't familiar with that term partitioning, it's think of it like this, that you're building a little brick wall between one side of your disk and a part of it that you're going to use for something else. Back to you, Rod.
And how much RAM for that disk, Chief?
The neat thing about it is, I would like to suggest, if you're going to play with Linux, throw it on an old beater computer by itself, get familiar with it, decide whether or not you're going to like it before you take that plunge into dual booting a system. sometimes you may decide, no, I don't want to do that. There may be issues that, you know, the Linux you're going to find will take care of just about everything. And let me get on to that second question. Gordon, did I answer your first question okay?
Yes, thank you very much, Raj. I would add one tidbit to it. When you're using the disk, how much RAM should one have in their machine? Over.
Well, I can tell you from experience, you know, usually the going standard right now is 1 gig, and it'll run. It'll run just fine because it uses swapping technology that will enable it to, you know, crunch its numbers, so to speak. But let me get into not to hold you off there, Gordon, but that was a good question. I want to get into this thing about running programs with Wine. Now, you got to understand something. I get very frustrated when I try to run something under Wine and it doesn't work. And Gary's right. It's not a 100% compatible with a lot of the software that's out there. I mean, it's a lot, but that it is compatible with, but there's still a good chunk of it that's not compatible. But that gets taken care of over time. Let me grab a nickel. The solution to that is running Linux. You can install, and this is another reason why I like Linux, because you get a repository that comes with that Linux distribution. And you don't have you run one program, and you can find all the programs you want to find. Well, there is a program called VirtualBox. I think that's the name of it. It's open source. It's free. And you can install Windows XP as a virtual PC and run all your programs. So, you know, when it comes to compatibility issues, there's really no compatibility issue at all. You just run a virtual computer that's a Windows machine running the Windows operating system, and if it was compatible with that Windows before, it'll be compatible there too. So I think that's all I wanted to say, Gary. I'll pass it over to you and shut my mouth for a minute.
Thank you, Roger. And you know, you can do that vicey-voicey too. You know, you can run Linux in a virtual machine in a Windows environment too. So a lot of flexibility there. You know, it's kind of cool when you start pulling some of these strings that you can do. Pretty neat stuff. Gordon, did that make sense to you, sir?
Yeah, sure did. I got a couple more questions, but I'm going to let you pick up these other guys. We'll pick it up later in the program. You probably covered it anyway. One such as, how does Linux work with a 64-bit quad-core system, or is that an issue at all? Over.
No, that should be a very happy computer doing that. just to kind of illustrate one point, you know, the and then we gotta move on too. We'll pick up some of the other folks here, but Linux is remarkable in the fact that you can go and get a cheapo special and make this thing run like a champ, or you can take, you know, a powerhouse and the thing becomes like atomic. You know, so it's just a different way of doing things. It works. You know, once you get things going, and I'm not going to talk about it's going. I'm not going to say it works, you know, perfectly right out of the box for everybody, because just like every Windows install is different, every Linux install is different. But we're going to get to that a little bit further down the line. But you know, but as a general rule of thumb, you can go down, I'll give you a great example. Within a 2-minute drive from here is the Syracuse University surplus goods warehouse, and they have these sales, right? You can go down, buy these Dells for like $50, you know, and they're like quad cores, and they're you know, they've got 4 gigs of RAM, and they're old XP machines, or, you know, early Windows 7 machines. And you know, for 50 bills, you've got one. You take it home, you put Linux on it, and it's like insanely good. So, you know, for $50, you know, you get a lot of computers. That's for sure. Okay, and Gordon, we'll be inviting your comments as we continue a little bit later on. But let's keep it moving We had, who did we have? We had 2 Bravo coming up next. So 2 Bravo, if you're still with us, come on aboard.
Yeah, good evening, Gary and everyone. Boy, what a net. This is really interesting stuff. But I'll echo what's kind of been said so far. This is an old computer, 13 years old, running Linux, and I'm running Echo Link under Wine. And I don't think it was ever this responsive back in the XP days when it had XP on it. But, yeah, Linux is pretty handy for people who are brave enough to use it, I guess. Anyway, back to that, NS2B. Keep it up, guys.
Hey, thank you. You know, well, the courage factor, which used to be significant, really isn't necessary anymore. It's just, if you're, you know, you kind of have to have that sense of adventure. You have to be willing to say, well, is there, you know, can I step out of the ordinary here? You know, can I break that paradigm? Because it is, you know, doing something different. You're not in a Windows world, but it's not going to be foreign to you either. You know, and same thing if you're a Mac user, you're not going to feel in a foreign land as well. You know, it's kind of like it's familiar but a little different. You know, you're able to get around very, very easily. So that's the cool thing. But you are totally right though, Bob. As far as you know, how it kind of rejuvenates old machines. That laptop that I've got, that old Inspiron laptop. Again, yeah, I'm totally with you. It runs better under Linux now, 7 years later, than it did when it was brand new, and that's for sure. Let me buy a nickel. We are talking about Linux, the advantages of Linux, why you should check out Linux, and what's involved with installing and running Linux, and the as the TIN continues. And we've got one more check-in from that last round. Let's hear from HA if you're there. Come on aboard, sir.
Oh, good evening, all. This is Fred, K2HA, down here in Winter Springs, Florida. And question about Linux. I have an old computer. I'm trying to get it up and running. It just needs a hard drive. The question is, how safe is Linux? I know it's open source, but doesn't that also mean that a lot of people have the code and they could break into anybody's computer? So this is Fred, K2HA.
Hey, thank you, Fred. I'm going to give my 50-cent answer, and then we're going to turn it over to Roger as far as that. So, you know, how secure is Linux? Okay. Linux is the operating system that forms the infrastructure of the internet. You know, if you've ever heard of Apache Server, you know, it's the core of the internet. As such, you know, it's pretty secure just the way it goes. Yes, people can get their hands on the code. It's open source, and yes, people can hack it. But then you have to look at, you know, how many millions of Windows users are there, how many millions of Mac users are out there, you know, and how many, you know, Linux users there. So proportionately, you're less likely to be subject to some sort of an attack, you know, with Linux. Can you get a Linux virus? Sure, you know. Same way as you can get a Mac virus, but you're less likely because the overwhelming amount of stuff that's written is written for Windows. Let's hear Roger's take on that, because he's you know, dealing with that on a daily basis, I'm sure. So let's hear what he has to say. W4RFJ, what do you think about this here whole thing?
And this is W4RFJ. Thank you, Gary, and good evening, Fred. And I also want to say hi to Bob. You know, security is always an issue, and it always will be. But I can tell you from experience that just the way the operating system works, security is less of an issue than Windows or OS X. Now, OS X is a form of Unix, so I can't really, I really don't have a lot of experience with it. I do use it, rarely, but Linux and the Unix style operating system, that's one of the things, one of the learning curves that you're going to find yourself on is how the operating system provides permissions to do things. So let me grab a nickel real quick. So the question is a very good question, and Gary is absolutely correct. There's not as many people writing malware. I don't think I've ever heard of any malware that will run on Linux. However, you can get viruses through your email, etc., etc. And that's not Linux's fault. That's the clients and the servers, how they exchange data. So I hope that was an answer to your question. And Gary, if you don't mind, if you're okay with it, I'd like to make a comment about that last question Gordon had.
Yeah, go right ahead, please.
Yeah, Gordon, I got to tell you, the Linux, and Gary and Bob have both mentioned this, it is proven. You can actually run a bunch of software that's similar between Windows and Linux, and you're going to find that the processor actually runs cooler with Linux than it would under Windows. Just the operating system itself, it does run cooler. It's more efficient. The code is more efficient, but you got people working on it all the time. It's being constantly improved, and what's great about that is when it comes out with a, you know, a final version, you get to update your system at a push of a button. Now, the last question you had was about the 64-bit multiprocessors. Well, symmetric multiprocessing, Linux loves, because now it doesn't have to divide up its time cycles to figure out how to multipurpose everything. It can assign a function to each processor. So it loves multiprocessors. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at a 32-core. One of these days I'll have enough money to buy one. That's my dream machine. Okay, I'm done. I'm off my soapbox. Go ahead, Gary. W4RFJ.
Thank you, Roger. 32 cores, caramba! Oh my goodness, it's pretty heavy duty stuff. But yeah, Linux will love it. Yeah, you know, Linux is undoubtedly the most computer friendly operating system out there, and that is a fact. Yeah, you know, I have a KVM switch here, and I pop between that Mac Mini and the HP when I need a Mac break. I just hit the switch and I'm over on the other side there, you know. And there is the interface is obviously a little different, but not that much different really. You know, the inner workings, you can kind of, it has a different feel, you know, when you're using a Unix-based operating system. It does have a different feel. I just roll the chair over to the other side of this office, and I turn on that laptop, and it's a very cool experience. It really is. You take a little from both, and you're in a world all by yourself, and it's a lot of fun. So definitely an experience that I can recommend to anybody. Let me buy a nickel. We are talking about Linux and installing Linux and living with Linux and answering questions about Linux and trying to maybe pique your curiosity a little bit. And hopefully we can do that by the time all this is over. This is the TIN. This is South Cars. I'm KC2RMO. And what do you say? Let's get some check-ins going right now, shall we? Yes, shall. Let's do some check-ins right now.
Romeo, Fox, Juliet.
Well, it looks like you're the only one that time around. So come on aboard.
Gary, I'm sorry. I thought we'd have a lot more check-ins than that. I just wanted to make a couple of quick comments. I am sharing some links on the text box. If anybody is listening and doesn't have access to that, they can email me at w4rfj@arrl.net, and I'll be glad to forward the links to them. One of them is a user's guide for Linux Mint, and I would like to suggest if you're going to try Linux, try the Mint, M-I, Mike India November Tango. The Mate version works on a 386 processor real well, more like an old XP machine, and it's a user's guide. It'll explain some things, and I think I shared a link earlier about the 20 reasons why you should switch to Linux, but that user's guide will help you make some of the decisions you need to make. Gary, back over to you, W4RFJ.
Thank you, Roger. You know, that's one thing that we might want to talk about right now, is that there are different distributions of Linux. They're called distributions, or distros for short. What Roger was talking about was one distro called Linux Mint, and it's a very good one, as a matter of fact. The other popular one is a distro called Ubuntu. Actually, I have Ubuntu running on the laptop because, and this is an interesting thing, and I just want to throw this in here. This Dell Inspiron was kind of an oddball model, it has had issues accepting different OSs before. I know it was originally a Vista machine. I reformatted the drive and I downgraded it to XP. Ran XP on it for quite a few years, and then we put 7 on it, and then I decided to try 8 on it, and this has had like everything on it. And finally, just blew the drive away, and so I'm using. I decided I would make this a Linux only computer. Now, here's the thing. During the install, I was trying to put Mint on it. During the install, it just didn't like it. It would only go so far in the install, and my installer stopped. Let me buy a nickel. So what did I do? I did not panic. Okay. I said, well, it's probably that installer doesn't like this machine. And I said, there's other distros out there. So I went and I got in the latest Ubuntu, downloaded it, burned the DVD, plunked it in there, and 45 minutes later, I had it all set up and running. So I guess the rationale here, what I'm trying to tell you, is that it may not, if you have troubles, You may not be able to get things to work, with plan A, but I guarantee you it's going to work with plan B. So, it's just that sort of thing. A lot of people write these installers. They write this software. You've got this whole community out there that works with this, and they're very, very good. This is the beauty of this whole open source thing. People are working for people. They are not working for a corporation. All they want to do is make the experience better for the next guy, and that's what they do. So there's a lot of different ways to fool around with it. It'll get you where you need to go, and it's obviously not going to cost you a lot of money. Let's just, before we get any deeper into it, let's see if anybody else wants to check in, and then we're going to go into phase two. So if anybody has any more check-ins to check in with, let's check in right now.
6 Victor, recheck.
Well, we have 6 Victor with a recheck, and Gordon, come on aboard.
Hey, thanks, Gary, and thanks, Raj. First of all, the Mint was installed by Doug down there in Fort Myers. That's GYF. He had absolutely no problem with it. Seems to like it very much. I've heard your story before about the Met versus the Ubuntu. And I want to know where these names come from. Ubuntu, does that mean that the designer or designers come from South Africa? Over.
I think that it means they come from the south side of Syracuse. I'm not sure, but it... that Ubuntu, now Roger knows this, and I've heard him mention it before, what the meaning of Ubuntu is. I think it means friendship, and I think it's Swahili, I think. Big question mark there. Let's throw it over to Roger and see if we can get the correct answer here.
Sorry, I got a little distracted there. I believe the definition of Ubuntu is community. Community. There was something else I wanted to say too. I was talking to Doug earlier, and he mentioned needing to know what direction to go. And later on, I do have a link that has a step-by-step 10 things you need to do after you're done installing it. Mint and. I'll be sharing that too, so that'll be another link in the text box. Back over to you, Gary. Sorry.
No problem. Hey, Roger. Just quickly. Well, I've got you right there. I don't have that family tree in front of me. So, do you have a second you could run over that for us?
I don't have it in front of me either, and I have to go find it. But yeah, it's huge. I thought maybe you could talk about that a little bit when you were talking about Ubuntu. Actually, Mint is an offshoot of Ubuntu, and you got to understand a lot of these distributions include or exclude things, and you can get a version that'll fit your computer more closely, such as in hardware, et cetera, et cetera. And you got to keep in mind you only have so much space to store all this programming data, drivers, et cetera, et cetera. So hardware specific, you know, if you're using generic equipment, it'll work. Any version of Linux will work. But sometimes you have hardware specific. I can give you a good example of that. Gordon, the Raspberry Pi, that runs a form of Linux, which is Debian-based, which is the same Ubuntu as Debian-based. I think there's Slackware, Debian, Red Hat, and SUSE were the like major versions, and it just like family treed off of those four different versions or distributions. It's huge. I'll have to find the link for that and send that around to everybody.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's like the old days when Mandrake was the big distribution back then, and it was kind of like Red Hat number one and Mandrake number two. You know, Mandrake was a little more user-friendly. And, you know, basically Mandrake was Red Hat with some user refinements, and that kind of did the trick for a lot of people. That was a great way for people to get their feet wet in Linux, which is what we're talking about tonight, in case you're just joining us. Linux and how to install it and how to use it. And what you can do, and pretty much, you know, I'm not going to say what you can't do, because I don't know of anything you can't do with Linux. It's that good. So that's the topic tonight. I was thinking too, you know, about the specific hardwares. That Inspiron that I've got, that's a 1721. The 1720 was a very common model for that year. It was basically a laptop that was designed to replace a desktop. The 1721 was a variant of it. They put like every quirk, every hardware quirk they could in that. I've always had trouble trying to find sound card drivers for it, and video drivers were always a little flaky on that thing too. So that's what happens, you know, if you've got you know, let's say 100 drivers on this disc, you know, for video or whatever, and yours just doesn't happen to be there. The installer doesn't know what to do, and it's like, oh, I don't know. I'm just going to stop, you know. If you get on another distribution and somebody included the driver for that, well, then it's going to go fine. The real old days, I mean, that's our thing. I think people still have this vision in their head of Linux being this command line driven operating system, you know, it looks like DOS, you know, that you're typing in a command. You can do it that way if you want. But I remember the old, and Roger probably remembers this too, the old boot up menu. You'd see the different processes on the boot, and it would go to, you'd see these different levels come up, and I think it was level 5 was the different, you know, where you'd go into the GUI or anything below level 5, you were on the command line. And if you didn't get into level 5, then, you know, it was like, you better get out your cheat sheet. but it's different nowadays. Big difference. And really, again, if you're not familiar with it, if you haven't taken a look in the past 5 years or so, you should take another look again, and you're in for a treat. Let me buy a nickel. So that's the subject tonight, and that's what we're talking about is Linux. We were talking that it sounds kind of hyper geeky to some people, that maybe it's a command line thing or whatever. And you know, the distros, again, to get back to what is a distro, it's basically an assortment of different software that comes with the operating system. So, you know, you load the OS, you get, and Roger just, Mandrake is an offshoot of Red Hat, and that was correct. You get the OS, you get so the Office suite, you get the web browser, you get the this, the that, the other thing, you get a laundry list of programs that come just from loading up this OS, and then there are more that you can get that you can download from the internet. So and free, yeah, you know, the best price of all, free. So it's a great deal in that regard. So that's the whole idea behind these distributions. So I'm going to turn it to Roger again, and Roger, I'm going to, you know, I hope that we've lit a fire under a few folks here, maybe got them curious enough. So what tips could you give to somebody ready to take the Linux plunge and install it on one of their computers? Your sage wisdom, sir.
All right. give me just a sec here. All right. I just sent the timeline. It's a picture. You're gonna freak when you guys see this, or you guys and gals see this. It's just like all the distributions that ever existed from time zero, when Linus Torvalds developed an open source operating system, which is Unix-like, and it was actually derived from an open source system called Minix. Anyway, if you're thinking about, and I hope I understood the question right, Gary, I might have to get you to repeat that, because I was multitasking right when you did that or asked the question, and I may be getting it wrong. But as far as getting a system together, you know, if you want to be able to just use the computer in place of Windows, just download it, install it, get into the software repository, install Office. But I've got another link that shows the 10 things that you should do once you're done installing Mint onto your computer. And I'd like to share that link. So I'm going to have to go get that. But I don't know if anybody's interested in just using it in replacement of Windows, or if they specifically want to use something for, let's say, All Star, for that matter. that can be done too. There's a lot of different ways you can do it. You can download a distribution that has it already set up, or you know, Packet. Packet's a really neat thing. I'm working on setting up a Raspberry Pi to get some of the old AX25 going again. Gary, I'm not sure if I'm answering that question correctly. Go ahead.
Well, so far, so good. And why don't you grab that link, and I will add a few comments to that, too. You know, when you think about what you can do with it, there's nothing you can't do with it. And that's what's so really amazing about it. It's like you don't have to be tied to one platform. That's kind of cool. It's, you know, some people, a computer is an appliance, you know. You go back to the old days, if you've been around computers for a while, you know. Back when every 6 months there was some cutting-edge thing going on, you know. I've been fooling around with computers since the mid-80s, you know, and my goodness, how things have changed, you know. You know, it's everything's a lot, obviously, a lot smoother and a lot more polished nowadays. And this is one operating system, one operating environment that's just as polished as anything else out there. It really does a great job, you know, in doing those things that you need a computer for. You know, Roger's talking about getting this Raspberry Pi to do you know, these tasks for amateur radio. And that's part of what we do as amateurs, you know. That's part of the hobby is experimentation. Some of us still build our own equipment. Back in the day, everybody built their own equipment. Everybody figured things out for themselves. Or you got an idea and you put something together and give it a try. And if it didn't blow up, it worked great. But in a way, you know, you have that same sense of adventure. Put this OS on an old computer, or pick one up down at the Goodwill or whatever, and just install it and play around and see what you can do with it. It's fun. If anything, it's fun. But it can be very practical for you too. It looks like Roger has something to say, and let's hear what he has to say. So Roger, come on aboard.
Gary. I almost forgot about this. I've kind of been jumping around. But there's a gentleman, I don't know what his full name is, but he's got a website. I think it's more of a blog than anything else. But he goes in there, this is like last year, December of last year, he wrote an article, Why Linux Will Replace Microsoft Windows and Apple OS X. And I really think he had some really neat perspectives on it. Being a person that you know, wants to have a computer that's got, you know, some sort of commercial backing, not commercial, maybe technical backing. Well, anyway, I'm going to share that link right now so everybody can pop that up in their web browsers and scope it out. I think this guy's really on the ball with the reason why Linux is starting to push out into the nudging the lead line or the bleeding edge with operating systems. KC2RMO, this is W4RFJ, sharing the link now.
Six Victor.
Yeah, there's Six Victor. Gordon, come on aboard.
Yeah, I'm sitting back here, guys, wondering how we can possibly orchestrate all of this information. We are recording this session tonight. It will be published as a podcast on our website, but we are not going to have the information contained in the text box. So I'd like some ideas on that. What we could do is either copy that, or maybe one of you guys can, if you're going to add to it also, Gary, put it in an email and send it to me, and we will write an article for the breaking news listing these items that people might want to take a look at. see what you think about that. The other question I had is, any of these drivers hard to get a hold of? Gary, over to you.
It's KC2RMO. Well, you know, first of all, you took the words right out of my mouth. I don't have those links, but Roger does. And, you know, Roger, if you can get those to Gordon, I was going to suggest putting them in the breaking news. I thought that would be an ideal spot for him because there's a wealth of information there. There really is. That will take you know, a long way on the Linux journey. That's for sure. So Roger, if you can maybe get those links over to Gordon, we'll get them up on the website, and you know, for the more adventurous souls, they're going to go and try them. That's good. As far as those drivers go, and again, I'm going to give my opinion, and then I'm going to send it over to Roger too and get his take on it. I have not had any problems, even with that old Dell, getting a driver to work. There is always, it seems there's always an appropriate driver located on that disk somewhere when you install it. The only problem I've ever had was with the installer itself maybe lacking a driver. Okay, and that was the problem on the Inspiron. I believe that the installer didn't have that driver, but when I went to change the distribution, the other one did. But as far as running the drivers themselves, no, I have never seen a driver issue with any distribution. You know, they all seem to work well. That is one of the really strong points of Linux. Is that it's really covers a lot of hardware. It encompasses a lot of compatibility as you go. So it's more so than you know, really, you know, it's certainly the equal to Windows, and without a doubt, in my opinion, I think it's superior to Windows as far as hardware compatibility. Let's hear what Roger has to say about that. Roger, what do you think?
Well, I agree with you, Gary. The drivers are usually not an issue. Where your processor came in, I'm not sure which one you said, Inspiron or whatever it was, that may be so old that, you know, Mint decided, well, we're getting all these new computers, you know, I don't think we're going to have to deal with them. And that's probably why Mint wouldn't load, but Ubuntu did. And, you know, Mint just adds some bells and whistles. You got to understand that every distribution has its strengths and its lackings. I'm going to say that, not failures, but lackings. And Mint, to me, has taken all the pucker factor out of getting a new person into using Linux. The GUI, or the graphical user interface, is similar, if not identical, to that. The same GUIs that you use on Windows and OS X, and really that takes all makes it easier. My mother, who's not a computer whiz, literally took a little Raspberry Pi running Raspberry Linux, which is a Debian version. It boots into a window, and she's going to town. She's using it for email. She's using it for office stuff, and she has it working with her printer and an external hard drive. She's just gone to town with it. It just blew me away. So I got to be careful what I give her, because she'll be spamming me if I keep doing that. But anyway, the distributions, you know, and let me grab a nickel. You know, if you really wanted to run Mint, Gary, you could have probably gotten on, you know, one of the IRCs, one of the chat rooms, and talked to the people that are actually developing and improving Mint, and actually gotten some answers or some solutions as to how to get that thing to boot with that processor. You know, they probably know. It's either that or compile it into the operating system so that it'll you know, use that processor. It's a little harder to do, but it's doable. I've done it. I've recompiled an operating system and to include things like you used to have to recompile the operating system to be able to use all the packet and AX25 protocols and all that stuff. So it can be done. It increases the learning curve. That's it. Go ahead, Gary. W4RFJ.
Well, thank you, sir. You know, well, that's the thing. I could have done that. But basically, I am so sick and tired of talking to people in chats and the whole nine yards. I'm just like, you know, for trying to get a straight answer out of people, just, you know, I'm this is my problem, you know. So I solved it my way, you know. This is not getting another distro, you know. But you're right. You can contact people within the community and get an answer. And that, pardon, is something that you're not likely to find with any other operating system. That you can actually go on a website and contact some people who know what they're talking about and answer a question for you. So, Gordon, does that make sense to you, sir?
Yeah, sorry, Gary. I just got up to walk away for a moment. Yes, it makes perfect sense to me. And to put a little humor into the show tonight here, guys, what did you call this distribution? Dester or something like that? Is that like an orchestra leader? Who uses multiple batons all at the same time? Over.
I think it was Ricky Ricardo's brother, wasn't it? Distro Ricardo. I think he did that. He had a couple of batons and an all-girl orchestra, I remember. It was kind of a novelty back in the 50s. It didn't last very long, and he got deported. But, you know, that was then, and this is now. So what the heck. We're talking about Linux tonight, and I hope we're enlightening some people. Let's find out. Let's take some check-ins. I'm KC2RMO. This is South Cars on the TIN.
Well, I've been too quiet. Victor X-Ray Papa.
Rick, I saw you there, and I kept wondering, why hasn't he come on aboard? Hello there, and welcome, welcome, welcome.
Yeah, I've been waiting for this night. I was looking at something, it's a dongle. Let me put it up in the text box, the link. Hang on a second. Yeah, I was looking at this particular device. It's a, like it says, Intel USB stick. And basically it's like a Raspberry Pi type of device. I looked at that and I said, oh wow, it's got Linux version as one of the units, Wi-Fi capability, and all the other good things. And I was saying to myself, man, you know, heck, rather than doing another computer, I could hook this up right to my HDMI TV, use that for a monitor, and I would have another computer. Of course, being Wi-Fi, I could put it, the unit right next to the TV, hooked up to the HDMI port on the TV, use that as a monitor, and utilize the whole setup Wi-Fi. And, you know, being that it's a Linux version, I'm thinking to myself, why? You know, once I got a friend of mine, actually a neighbor, his brother is into computers, and he's trying to convince my neighbor to go over to Linux on his system. And I think once he gets that, I'll take a look at it really good, and that'll be my decision. Let me drop for a second. You know, it'll be my decision. After playing around with Linux for a little bit, if the guy does do it, which I'm pretty sure he's going to, and you know, it would be another computer in the living room other than my laptop and tablet, but it won't be so obvious because I could run the laptop and run this other unit, run the other unit, have the TV as the monitor. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, for a video source of HDMI, that definitely would be quite the thing. 24-inch screen would be really easy on the eyes and something that just overall, it's another little device to play around with. With that, over to you, Gary, KC2RMO in the net, N1TXD.
Well, thank you, sir. I do not know of this dongle. I will have to take a look and check this out. I used to take the Mac Mini. We have a 41-inch wall-mounted TV in the bedroom, and I put a shelf up and put the little Mini Mac up there, and I had a wireless keyboard and a wireless mouse. As a matter of fact, I bought one that had a combination mouse and keyboard with it, and you could just sit in bed and surf the web. You know, it was great. So that was pretty cool. But I decided to bring it into the ham shack, so maybe I'll pick up another somewhere along the line and see what we can do with that. But then again, you've got so much, you know, you've got everything's becoming these little dongles now. You know, I've got the Roku device is on that TV now. There's a Chromecast that I've got in the other port. You know, and it's like so. I'm interested about this thing because it has an OS in it, and you know, they could save me another computer. So that's pretty cool stuff. I have to check that out. But that's neat stuff, especially you know. Rick, do you remember what the cost was on that?
I'm not really sure of the cost. I know it's a little bit high, but it, I just glanced over it. It's a quad 4 Atom processor, 2 gigs of memory on it, Wi-Fi and Bluetooth compatibility. So what they're trying to say on this little unit is, in fact, why have a computer? Why not use this little device, hook it up to your HDMI TV, and you'll have a full processor with Linux. Of course, they do also have Windows operating, and they will have one for Windows 10, but I thought that would be quite interesting that they offer one in Linux only, and one TXT.
That'd be a great way for somebody to get their hands on a Linux machine in a small form, a very small form factor. Fred just put something up in the text box about a Mi Go Pad stick, T01 for Windows 8.1, and I wonder if that's the same manufacturer as the Linux item too. So, but that's $106, and that you know, I could put that on my Christmas list, you know. Uses the Atom processor. I mean, gee whiz. I mean, you stick that in the USB port of a TV, and you're right, Rick. You know, you could be rocking and rolling, and if all you're going to do is get your email in there and hit a few websites, you know, it's perfect for that. So why not? You know, it gets amazing. It gets more amazing all the time. It really and truly does. I mean, you think about it. Let me buy a nickel. Remember hitting the local bulletin boards on your Commodore 64 with that blazingly fast 300 baud modem and waiting all night long for that 500K program to download? We're talking about Linux tonight, and it could be a good thing for a lot of people, that's for sure. And I hope, again, we're getting some people interested in it because that's kind of like the whole focus of this whole net, you know, to try to answer any questions and to try to pique some curiosity too. So, and that's the thing. Have we piqued any of your curiosity? Do you think maybe you'd like to give it a plunge? Let's see if anybody's willing to step up and tell us. We'll take some check-ins right now. On the TIN, I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars. I think we've got some people that are not ready to take the plunge. Maybe they're thinking about it anyway, you know. But, you know, it's Roger, you know, I kind of think, you know, you have to, maybe people are sitting there saying, okay, these guys are talking a good game, but what can I do with Linux? What can I do in a practical sense with Linux? And I know earlier on, about an hour ago, we were kind of touching the surface on that. But let's maybe expand that a little bit. I know I was talking about how I have pretty much that set up to run the radio station. Is essentially a Linux radio station. I transitioned it initially from Windows to OS X, and then I said, well, let's do this Linux experiment. And I've been very happy with that. It has been extremely successful, and again, here is a nice, you know, older piece of hardware, but it's no speed demon. It has totally changed character under this operating system, and you're very right about the way it handles memory. It just rocks, you know. So I'm having really, really good success in the ham shack with it, and that's pretty much where I'm focusing my efforts with it right now. It's a very good machine for using it for my ham hobby. But what other things? What would you recommend that, or what would you advise people that are maybe going to go into this and, you know, say, what can you do for it? Do with it, I guess. What can I do with Linux? So that is the question for you, sir.
Wow. You know, this is W4RFJ for all those radios that are out there. This is one of the questions that you got to pick something and dive in. I really started getting into Linux many, many, many moons ago when I was going from MSys, which was a packet bulletin board program run under Windows, to TNOS. TNOS is a bulletin board program that runs under Linux. And I found that the more I played with it, the easier it was to communicate with other computers. Windows is still chugs along in that arena. I use Linux as a gateway into my home network. I actually have three or four different networks depending on what I'm trying to do. I've got a network that has all my servers on it. I have a network strictly for amateur radio. I have a network for the house. I have a network that actually will be feeding a mesh system that I'm developing all under Linux. I want to add too, you know, that FOB was a pretty good idea, but this UK group developed the Raspberry Pi, which gives you 1 gig of RAM, a quad-core processor, and even GPIO pins that you can turn things on and off or check to see if things are on or off. And it's really an experimenter's little computer. I showed Gordon a couple of them when I was down there visiting him last month. And it's no bigger than the size of a cigarette pack with the case on it. So, you know, they're doing the same thing with that they're talking about doing with this FOB that you have there. Let me grab a nickel. Okay, so as far as ideas of what you can do, you know, you can set up a Linux box that is just for gaming, or you can set one up that connects your radio. You know, AllStar is neat because I can set up a serial interface between my AllStar computer and my HF rig, And from my handheld in the backyard, I can change the frequency, I can make it tune the antenna, I can control it remotely over the internet, all using Linux. So, hey, there's a good one for you. Gary, what do you think?
I think I like that. That's what I like to hear. And really, you know, you can get, it's like anything else, you can get as easy or as complex as you want. You know, this, you know, Roger's got this amazing setup and he's doing some amazing things with this operating system. You may not want to go that far. I mean, for you, it might just be, I want to send an email, you know, I want to write a letter. I want to go and check the weather on the internet, you know. That, if that's as far as you go, well, it's not going to cost you anything. And again, you know, we've been stressing the free thing, but I mean, you know, look at it this way. Love or hate Microsoft, and I would expect there's more people on one side of the fence than the other, but love them or hate them, all right? Look at what their track record's been in OS releases. You know, we started out with XP. Well, we started out with other stuff, you know, but let's just take it from XP. You go from XP, which was a great operating system. You know, people just used that for years and years and years, and it never it was good and stable, and it did its job. It had some security issues, but other than that, you know, it was a good deal. And then what did we go to? We went to Vista, which was essentially the biggest bomb since Hiroshima. We go from Vista to 7, which is a fine operating system. Let me buy a nickel. From 7, we go to Windows 8, which most people did not like, and I was one of them. Once you use it long enough, you can get it to be tolerable, but it's not a favorite of mine, you know. So I say, you know, yeah. You know, it's like, forget it. So I can live without Windows 8, that's for sure. That's why this kid right here is a Windows 7 machine. But their track record in releases has been up and down, up and down, up and down. One great thing about Linux is that it's very consistently good. It's reliable from one distribution to another. From one version to another, it's very stable. And again, you may see some improvements in the GUI. You may find different features, you know, added through the years. But the world that you're in feels very comfortable, no matter what. So you don't have that roller coaster ride of Microsoft distributions. That's for sure. So here we go. We're almost on the half hour right now, as we're halfway through the second hour. Let's see if anybody would like to check in at this particular point in time. This is the TIN. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
Quebec Yankee.
Quebec Yankee. Hello there, Jim. It has been like forever. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm verbally. As far as that goes, and I've been here on every show, except I just sitting back here observing. But you was asking about Linux, or more about Ubuntu, for exact, and. We're running Ubuntu here on one machine, and it like so many others, is a Vista machine. It wasn't worth a darn Vista. It wasn't even a good piece of trash. So we put Ubuntu on it, and it seemed to be real good, with the exception of getting on our network. We never have figured that one out. And, of course, you got to run your network in order to get to the to the internet, to the modem. So, some of these days somebody can explain how that works, but I really like the Ubuntu system. It was easy to install, I remember that much. It just zip zip, and it was installed and running as good as it is now. It did that good the first day. And the only thing it don't do so far is get on our network. And I was glad to like to hear somebody that could tell me how to make it go that way. Over.
Well, Jim, I'll tell you, my laptop was a Vista laptop, and I had all kinds of weird driver problems with it as a Windows machine, I suspect there was something with those Vista machines that I don't know. Maybe the hardware was just a little different. I really don't know. I just know that you know, Vista was bad all the way around. What I would suggest doing is something that Roger mentioned a little earlier. You know, if you're having some troubles. There are a lot of, you could go to the Ubuntu website. They have like user groups, and you could talk that over with people. The other thing too is what version, Jim, are you running? What version of Ubuntu are you running?
I don't know. We've had it for 3 years, so I just don't know.
This is KC2RMO. I say to you too, before you go, seeking help, download the latest. It's Ubuntu 13, and see if that'll help you. Or, you know, as Roger's been talking about Linux Mint, that's another distribution that may have some drivers that'll work well for you there too. So those would be my the first two recommendations I would make would be to load the latest and greatest Ubuntu on it, or go to Mint and see if that'll help you. Let's see what the doctor says. Let's see what Dr. Roger has to say. Let's get a professional opinion here.
You would what?
Say again, Roger.
It's almost like you cut yourself off, Gary. You said I would and then unkeyed.
Well, that was pretty rude of me. What I was saying, let's check with the doctor here and see if you can offer an opinion to Jim regarding his networking issues. I suggested that maybe he gets the latest and greatest version of Ubuntu because his distro is a couple years old, or that he could check out Mint, but maybe you have some other ideas too.
No, Mint is a good idea, but you know, it's really hard to offer advice with something like this, because obviously right now your network adapter, I'm assuming, is Ethernet or Wi-Fi, whatever it is. You're going to have to go in and configure it to work on your network. I know most of the Ethernet stuff that I've used, especially with Mint, it comes up under DHCP, which means it'll go to your router to get its information as to how to connect to the network. So, I mean, there's a couple of things you need to do, Jim. You need to make sure that you got good connectivity. If it's wireless, you need to make sure you've got a good path to your router. Then you got to make sure that it's set up to get the information from the router. I haven't run Ubuntu in so long, I wouldn't be of any help to you right now. I'd have to research it. However, I do like what Gary said. Get on the, actually you can Google it and see what Google says. Get on Ubuntu's website on one of your other computers and ask the question in its search bar. And, you know, hey, how do I get my network up and running? And I'll bet you money you'll find a lot of answers there. Does that help, Gary?
Sounds like it would. Let's ask Jim. Jim, did that help?
Yeah, I think it did. And if we decide to go with the later version of Ubuntu, or Mint, either one, should we lay them over the top of this version, or should we just wipe the disk out and start all over again?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You know, you've got a couple-year-old installation, too. You know, it's not going to hurt just to reload a distribution, you know, to update it with the latest and greatest. Because what you need may be in there, you know. But if it's an older machine, Roger made that point earlier on that 1721 of mine. It might just be so old, you know. It's like that they just didn't include it, you know. So, but that's a good idea. So maybe give that a try too. But yeah, definitely, you know, do a little Googling and see if you can find some folks to talk to about that too. They may have some suggestions, especially when you get specific with your hardware and your version and what have you. That might be the key for you. So you got a couple options there. You know, you can't lose. You really can't lose. So we're talking about Linux tonight, and we're kind of getting wound down here. So what do you say? I'm gonna make this the last round of check-ins. So if you wanna come aboard, now's the time to do it. Yeah, Roger has one more comment, and so we'll kick it off with Roger's comment. So Roger, what? How say you?
Yeah, thanks, Gary. Jim. The one thing that I want to make sure you understand is if you do a complete install, any data that you have on that computer, such as documents, emails, well, obviously you're not on the internet, so you're not using email, but you just got to make sure that you get all of your personal data, data that you've developed, you know, like documents or pictures and stuff like that. You know, copy them to an external drive. Before you do any, you know, install. I'd hate to say, yeah, just do a brand new install and then realize after the fact that, oops, I had pictures of Rebecca there that I didn't want to get rid of, you know. So anyway, that was my comment, Gary. Thank you very much. W4RFJ.
See, I always recommend not doing that because, you know, like my criminal record would go away. But no, just kidding, just kidding. You know, but that is good advice, and you know, that's anytime you do anything major on a computer, it is always a great idea, and matter of fact, that should be automatic to make a backup of the things that you know are most vulnerable. You know, all your documents, your emails, anything that's important to you, get that backed up before you start experimenting or doing something that you're not 100% sure of, or something that you are 100% sure of, because Murphy's got that law and it always works. So that is some good advice, Roger. So anybody else want to come aboard last time around? Okay, nothing heard. Roger, it has been great working with you. You could teach a class. It's great to hear from you. It's great to be a co-host with you. And I think everybody had a great time tonight learning about Linux. And I hope we get some Linux users out of this thing. So you're in the box there. I think, is that one more comment, Roger? Go ahead.
Sorry, I was scrolling through the script again. No, that was from the last time. Yeah, it is getting late. I got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I'm definitely winding down. Certainly have enjoyed being here tonight, Gary, and I want to thank the skipper KY6V for thinking of it and asking us to join in here, and definitely have had a blast working with you there, Gary. We'll have to do it again and more often. If anything, we need to bump our heads together and play with some of these projects we got going on. Sounds to me like you'd probably jump in where I can't get it very much further, and I might be able to do the same for you. And I want to make it clear to everybody that's listening in that, you know, we're always available. My call sign at ARRL.net, That's just in case my address changes, it'll always be able to get to me. And thanks again.
Well, thank you. And again, we do need to get involved with some of these other things too. But it's been a great night. And our thanks to everybody that checked in tonight. And as I said earlier, I hope we got some people inspired and maybe or at least interested. And love to hear from you how you're making progress too. That's for sure. So thank you. And this has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VoIP net schedules and general information may be found on the VoIP.southcars.com website. Your net control for this session has been Gary, KC2RMO, along with Roger, W4RFJ, saying 7-3, and closing this VoIP session. Thanks for your participation. This net is closed.